New Mexico lawmakers had better rest up. They may have plugged a $600 million plus gap in the state budget during the special session, but they'll have another challenge when they meet again in regular session in late January. There's a budget crisis looming for next year, too. Plus, the session coming up in January will be the prelude to important statewide elections coming up next June and November. And the campaigning will undoubtedly be a platform for hurling criticism at the Richardson administration for the budget deficit and also the numerous allegations of pay-to-play that have come out over the past year or so. Those allegations stem from what some are calling political contributions made in order to get lucrative state contracts. A Santa Fe-based nonprofit advocacy group has a recommendation that could end those questions. The group named Think New Mexico is proposing to the legislature to enact a state law that would eliminate political contributions from companies and lobbyists and special interest groups. Fred Nathan is executive director of Think New Mexico and joins us. Do you think such a law, if it were in place already, would have put that question of pay to play at rest because the money simply wouldn't have been there in the first place?
Well, it's impossible to tell, but usually these relationships, and I guess I should start with the proposal, which is simply to ban political contributions by lobbyists and special interests both at the state and local level, which has been done now in a handful of states and upheld by the courts. And I think where most of this starts is actually on the campaign trail, these relationships between government contractors, for example, and elected officials. So I think it would have an effect on reducing the number of these pay-to-play incidents that seem to plague our state.
Do you have at hand the other states that have elected that have enacted this sort of legislation?
I do.
Who are they?
There's two groups of seven states. First, there are seven states which restrict lobbyists from making political contributions. They are Alaska, California, Connecticut, Kentucky, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And then there's another seven states that prohibit government contractors from making political contributions, and those are Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Kentucky, New Jersey, South Carolina, and West Virginia. And we talked to people in Kentucky and Connecticut because in those two states they have prohibited contributions from both groups, lobbyists and contractors. And we interviewed a number of people, and they basically said the same thing to us, which is that it has just transformed the political culture in their states, and now the emphasis, you know, with lobbyists is on the merits of the issues rather than on showering elected officials with campaign contributions and trying to do things through relationships.
Those are interesting collections of states. For the most part, many of them sound like they're red states, Republican-sided states.
You're right. South Carolina, West Virginia,
Tennessee,
Kentucky, they all fall into that category. But there's some blue states there, too, I would point out, Connecticut and Hawaii and New Jersey.
So when and why did these states do this?
What seems to have prompted it in almost every case is political corruption scandals and then the need to restore confidence and trust. And certainly New Mexico, we've had our share recently with the indictment and convictions of two state treasurers, a former Senate majority leader. And the common denominator in all of these cases were very lucrative state contracts. And so we started with just looking at, well, what if we just prohibited contributions from contractors? But of course, if you do that, then you're overlooking another group of interested special interests, those seeking large subsidies from state government. So we extended it to them. And then, of course, that alone probably wouldn't do very much because they could still channel their contributions through their lobbyists. So we included lobbyists. And then the third component of this is bundling, because a lot of times, even if you prohibit special interests and lobbyists from contributing, they'll still throw parties and try to ingratiate themselves to elected officials through raising money from their friends. So we've also put in a provision on bundling.
How would the system work? What would you require of people wanting to make contributions, or would they strictly not be allowed to do anything?
The latter, you're exactly right. It's actually a very simple system that's worked well in these states, and it's a deterrent, and so they don't make the contributions to begin with, and then you find that your campaigns, your elections are funded by the people who don't have any conflicts of interest. And that's really the way it should be. And I think, you know, political anthropologists years from now will look back on this if we're successful and enact this and say, why would you have done it any differently? And I think our challenge is to convince these elected officials who don't know any other system than the current system that there is a different way to approach all of this and to just run less expensive campaigns and focus on the voters and focus on just ordinary New Mexicans rather than giving an outside voice to special interests and lobbyists. And that's really one of the main benefits of this, is that it will strengthen the voice of everyday New Mexicans, because they won't be drowned out by the lobbyists and special interest money.
What kind of early indication have you gotten from people who might be in a position to decide, members of the legislature?
We've talked to a few rank-and-file members who have actually called us, and it's generally supportive. Of course, the ones that don't think it's a good idea generally don't call us. But the surprising thing, Bill, is that we've gotten calls from a number of lobbyists who, you know, you might think at first glance would oppose this, but what we've discovered is that the lobbyists, they're really not monolithic. There's one group of lobbyists that wants to be heard on the merits and not on the size of their bank accounts and political contributions, and they're all in favor of it. And I suspect there's another group of lobbyists who have basically, you know, don't do their homework, aren't really prepared, and do it on the basis of showering campaign contributions and on relationships with elected officials. And I should emphasize here, we're not just talking about state legislators. Our proposal looks at both state elected officials, but also local officials. And a lot of people overlook the fact that local school boards, municipalities, and counties let contracts for millions and millions of dollars. And there's been a number of incidents involving corruption at that level as well.
Could you construct, if you were on a side opposite to your proposal, standing up in the legislature, speaking against this, what might you say?
I think what we're going to get is this sort of old legal construct, which is actually still current law, that money equals speech. And I think what's happened, for example, in Connecticut recently, they passed a law like this, and the Trade Association for the Lobbyists tried to beat it. They lost, and then they took it to court, and they said that somehow that their First Amendment rights were being restricted by this, and the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one level below the Supreme Court, found it to be a very easy legal decision and upheld the state law banning contributions by lobbyists and pointed out that the law was narrowly tailored to combat political corruption and cited a number of incidents in Connecticut, and that it didn't really abridge the free speech rights of the lobbyists, who could still, of course, talk to legislators and lobby them pro or con on their issue of choice. It simply restricted their ability to make contributions. And that court and a number of other courts that have looked at this, stretching all the way to the Alaska Supreme Court, have repeatedly upheld this. The only court that didn't was a court in Colorado, where there had been a referendum, and that law was overly broad and probably should have been struck down. So we are, when drafting our bill, we're of course going to look at these other statutes and make sure that our law is narrowly tailored. But I'm guessing that the opposition will be on those grounds.
Have you gotten any indication from candidates for governor or lieutenant governor how they may feel about this?
You know, we're really in the early stages, so we haven't approached any of those candidates, but I'm hopeful that they would all be supportive of this. And, you know, something that I hope they don't overlook is that invariably what happens with candidates is they're trying to raise money, and it's, of course, always more difficult than you expect it to be. And they say, well, we'll have these lobbyists hold a fundraiser for us. I can keep these two things separate. But when they get elected, then they find out that they've been severely compromised. In fact, somebody, an elected official here in New Mexico, who's on the PRC, told me that when he was running for the PRC, he got handed a contribution of, I don't know, some amount of money, and didn't know the person, and later discovered once he got elected that the person that had given him the money was a landlord for one of the offices of the PRC, and it was a very lavish contract for the landlord, not so good for taxpayers. And it's just a great example of a well-intended person running for office thinking that the person that gives them a contribution is just supporting them because they're so good and so kind and wonderful, and then comes to find out that there's something else attached, and he regretted that he had accepted that contribution. So, you know, even a lot of candidates, I think, really don't realize how easy it is to become compromised under our current system, where lobbyists and special interests can make contributions and, of course, take full advantage of the system.
There is the old adage, he who pays the piper calls the tune.
And unfortunately, that has been the history of New Mexico for too long.
Fred Nathan at Think New Mexico, many thanks. And more information on his proposal available on their website, Think New Mexico, one word, thinknewmexico.org.